In her new report to Congress covering 2014, the National Taxpayer Advocate tells of a grim situation for the IRS. Service has eroded badly, oversight is poor, and tax administration is being reshaped in negative ways by forces outside the agency's control. Well, there's plenty of blame to go around, but the situation isn't hopeless. Joining me with the problems and some possible solutions, taxpayer advocate Nina Olson. Ms. Olson, great to have you on.
Good morning.
All right, so let's review, first of all, the budget situation, which seems to underlie a lot of what is affecting the IRS. Tell us what the trends have been here and what's going on for next year.
Well, the trends in the actual budget have been that the IRS budget since fiscal year 2005 has decreased a significant amount. And even since 2010, it's overall increased by 9.9%. And we estimate the impact of inflation is another 9 or so percent. And so that gives you about a 17% decrease just since 2010. And what that has meant is, of course, many fewer employees available to do a workload that has just burgeoned.
All right. So if the budget has been declining all those years, then it's really kind of a bipartisanly caused budget decline.
Yes. Well, I think, you know, it takes both parties to pass a budget bill. And some of the budget decline has been the result of sequestration, which has impacted all federal agencies. But on the other hand, many federal agencies have had in the more recent budget years have had their budget, the impact of sequestration, you know, changed. You know, it's been put back into their budget. That hasn't been the case with the IRS. And then we have had cuts on top of that. And I think that's in many ways attributable to a distrust on the part of members of Congress about how the IRS has handled itself and handled the resources that it has, specifically in light of the political activities by social welfare nonprofit organizations.
Okay, we'll get back to that, but let's talk about the workload and what it's like in Europe, as far as you can tell, for the employees that have to process, because the population's gone up a little bit since 2005.
Yeah, you know, what we have found is that there has been an 11% increase in individual income tax returns, and almost half of that increase has occurred since 2010, the years in which our budget really started declining. There's been an 18% increase in business income tax returns. Between 2005 and 2013, there was an 82% increase in calls on one of our main phone lines, that, you know, the 1040 number that most people call. And, you know, taxpayers are really calling the IRS, and that, of course, is in some ways a reflection of the number of tax law changes that have occurred during that time. And also, you know, with this year, the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, and then, of course, identity theft issues, just all sorts of questions.
Yeah, the IRS actually got a big piece of work from the Affordable Care Act, too, correct?
Yes, and this filing season is the first year where taxpayers will be what we call reconciling their advance premium tax credits. If they received, you know, if their insurance companies received payments, a subsidy during the year for them to be able to afford health insurance, then they will have to reconcile that on their income tax return. And as well, it's the first year of where, if you're supposed to be covered by insurance and you're not, we would be looking at the individual shared responsibility payment, the amount of money that you'd have to pay for not having insurance coverage when you're required. And those are two big, heavy lifts because they come in during the filing season when people are really expecting their refunds and they don't want their returns held up, you know, and they don't want their refunds held up. And that generates phone calls and generates correspondence to us if we don't get those out timely.
All right, so you've got this increase in workload, you've got the ACA, you've got 18% more business returns and so on. What is the effect of all of this on what taxpayers encounter when they come to the IRS by several means?
Well, and that's where the rubber meets the road, if you will. The IRS is projecting that they will only be able to answer 50% of the calls that come in from taxpayers wanting to speak to a live assister. You know, they can always get to automated processes, but the automated processes don't necessarily answer what the taxpayer needs to give the taxpayer the answer that they need, or the taxpayer needs to tell someone something so something bad doesn't happen to them. And if and it is possible that the that they could it could be as low as 43%. That means that more than half of the calls coming in wanting to speak to a live assister will not be answered. And even if they do get answered, they'll have to on average wait about 30 minutes. And that means, you know, on average some people might get answered quickly, more quickly, depending on when they call, but others will wait longer. And the other things that the IRS has done is that they have limited the scope of the tax law questions that they will answer. So when I first started practicing back in 1975, lots of people would call into the IRS and they could get almost any question answered. Over the years, the IRS has limited how many questions and what kind of, not just how many, but what kind of questions they will answer. And last year and this year, they really limited the scope. So they'll only answer the most simple ones. And that's sort of like someone calling up. If someone calls up and says, I am married and I don't know whether to file married filing jointly or married filing separately. What's the difference between the two statuses? The IRS says that's too complex for them to answer.
Wow.
If you call up and say, my child has a bank account, where do I report the income on, you know, does my child have to file an income tax return or do I have to report it on my income tax return? The IRS says that's too complex to answer. And when you get to that point, you just think, what are you doing to your taxpayers? The other thing about these tax law questions is after April 15th, the IRS will not answer any of them. They are only open for business in the tax law question business from up till April 15th. Well, the Government Accountability Office did a study a few years ago and found that about 44%, almost half of the questions that were answered in the year that they were studying came in after April 15th because so many people file extensions. So for all those people who can't get their questions answered by the IRS, they will either have to try to solve them themselves and have some risk that they might have read something incorrectly or pay somebody. So for a service that they formerly got for free for the privilege of filing their taxes correctly, they are now going to have to pay somebody.
We're speaking with the National Taxpayer Advocate, Nina Olson. And on the other side, what is all of this budget cuts and so forth doing to enforcement and revenue that's actually coming into the United States government?
Well, the commissioner estimates that they're going to have to not do as many audits and may not be able to collect as much. I'm a little less sure about the collections because so much of our money comes in through things like refund offsets and our levies are automated. I think the real impact there is going to be that the IRS will do sort of continue in some of its more automated collection activities, and taxpayers wanting to call in and say, wait, don't take that money, I can't pay my food, my rent, will not be able to get through and harm will happen to taxpayers. That is really where my concern is. I think that there is going to be an impact in the number of audits that the IRS does and an impact in the number of some of the collection cases. But I will also point out that, you know, the IRS collects over $3 trillion a year. I mean, that's a lot of money. Of that $3 trillion, only 2%, just about 2%, is attributable to our direct enforcement actions, like grabbing somebody's bank account or levying on their paycheck or something like that. Only 2%. And the rest of it comes in because of some mixture of taxpayer service or people being afraid about being audited or the IRS collecting against them. And so if you have a drop in enforcement revenue of 10%, let's just say, you know, one-tenth of, we don't get as much enforcement revenue because we can't do as many audits. That's about $6 billion. But if you have a drop of 10% in taxpayer service revenue because taxpayers can't get through on the phones or get their letters answered, that's $300 billion. And so the real impact on revenues, I believe, will be because the IRS is not providing the taxpayer service that taxpayers need.
Just a few minutes ago, you painted a pretty tough picture for the situation the agency is in, but you've also got some recommendations. And let's start with ones to the IRS itself. What can it do, if anything, internally to get itself in a better position to overcome some of the challenges it's got this year?
Well, I think that the IRS really, there's some things that the IRS can do itself that, well, let me just first say, there's no solution to the taxpayer service situation other than just needing more human beings on the taxpayer service side because of the number of calls, the number of pieces of correspondence, that you just need people to open them and process them and answer the calls, and automation just doesn't do that. The IRS is trying to move some calls from the phones to the internet, and it is working very hard, I think, to make some facilities available to people on the internet. It's trying to create taxpayer accounts that's several years off, but so that people could check the status of their activity online without having to make a phone call. And today, people can call to find an automated line to find the status of their refund and don't necessarily need to talk to a human being. I think on the enforcement side, the IRS really could do a much better job of understanding what things help taxpayers comply with the laws. And it doesn't, and I think it does a lot of work that creates, on the enforcement side, that creates unnecessary calls and unnecessary burden on taxpayers. And I've said to the commissioner, he really needs to look, use this time when we've got limited funding as an opportunity to look at all the ways that it's been doing things on the enforcement side and say, are we just doing this because we've always done it this way? Is this the right way to really reach out to taxpayers to drive future compliance? And I view that as an opportunity. And then at the end of it, they could come back to Congress and say, we've really rejiggered some stuff and we've thought about it and we think we can do things better and less burdensome for taxpayers. And that would help restore some of the confidence that Congress doesn't have in the IRS right now.
And of course, short of writing a tax code that is worthy of intelligent human beings, and that's not going to happen anytime soon, I don't think. What can Congress do? I mean, you've made some recommendations for Congress to help out here.
Well, I've certainly recommended first that they fund taxpayer service at the level that they need to. But second, I have said two things. One, that Congress really does need to codify the Taxpayer Bill of Rights that the IRS, after my recommendation, adopted this summer, and make it permanent as part of that hideously complex law, and then enact some more taxpayer protections that we've identified over the years to give some teeth to that Taxpayer Bill of Rights. So it's not just a promise. It's actually something that taxpayers can seek remedies for if their rights have been violated. And then with that, Congress actually needs to do more effective oversight of the IRS. And by that, I mean, I know that people think that's really odd because, as you've noted earlier, it seems like there's a lot of oversight of the IRS, the hearings about the social welfare groups and the political activities. But what we haven't had oversight on is, how did you make these decisions about what taxpayer services you weren't going to fund? How are you actually collecting taxes against taxpayers? What is it going to take for taxpayers to be able to see their accounts online and communicate by email with the IRS or get, you know, answers by email? And, you know, all of those sorts of things. How do you select returns for audit? Meaning, you know, are you really selecting the right returns for audit? Or are you just burdening taxpayers and not getting the, you know, and leaving others that really needed to be audited behind? And that's the nuts and bolts of tax administration. And I think it would be helpful for the IRS to be able to make its case to Congress. At the same time, it would be helpful for Congress to hear what the IRS is doing and say, we think this is the right direction or we think this is the wrong direction.
Now, there's a new chairman of the Ways and Means Committee in the new Congress, Paul Ryan. Any sense that he's listening to the reports you're sending up there and some of the other people that are involved with oversight?
Well, I haven't had a chance to meet with Congressman Ryan specifically, but I have had an opportunity to meet with the chair of the Oversight Subcommittee, Congressman Roskam, and I've met with the Ways and Means staff and the Senate Finance staff, and they are listening very carefully. And I'm looking forward to meeting with Chairman Ryan as well. I think that, you know, I think what people need to understand, and it's something that I feel very strongly, is that it's very easy to pillory the IRS because it is the tax man. You know, it's since time immemorial a detested role in
sure.
government, in society. But it is also since time immemorial, it has been a vital role. You don't have government if you don't have some kind of revenues. And the people who do this job are decent people who are trying to do it with integrity. And the taxes
sure.
provide a framework for our entire society. And we have to get over that hatred and hold the IRS accountable.
And we're going to have to leave it there.
Yes.
And Nina Olson is the National Taxpayer Advocate at the IRS. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.